On a beautiful August day, a little over 5 years ago, I arrived here at Church of the Resurrection for my interview with the vestry, the church's board of elected leaders. By that time, I had spent enough time with the search committee to know that I was falling in love with this community, and I was really excited to be meeting these leaders in person. Two of them, Neil Crawford and Carrie Vierink, met me out on the sidewalk, and they were going to lead me on a tour of the campus before we sat down to talk our way through lots of questions. And so we headed up the path towards the office, but as I passed by the church doors, I caught a glimpse of something out of the corner of my eye. I couldn't quite make sense of it at first. It was a big piece of wood, but it also looked like sort of a statue. And so I looked at it directly and was confused to see that it was very clearly falling apart. The wood was rotten and crumbling. Stepping closer, I saw that it had a small plaque attached to it. It read, "Dry rot, the wages of neglected maintenance." I chuckled, still confused, and now feeling even more curious to learn about this church. I found out that the wood was part of the church, or rather, it had been part of the church. It was the end of one of the glue lambs, this being a word I did not yet know, one of these amazing curved arching beams made of glue laminate, so a glue lamb. And when times were lean, it had been tough to prioritize taking care of the building proactively. And the ends of some of the glue lambs outside had become seriously rotten. When they were eventually fixed, Klaus Berkner, another key leader here, was committed to helping us think and live in a different way. And he had the monument to dry rot made as a reminder. In all the many churches I have visited, I have never seen anything like it. John the Baptist is in another kind of wilderness when we catch up with him this morning. Not just the wilderness of weighing difficult choices, but a more literal one, out along the Jordan River. Like Klaus, John is also grabbing people's attention and inviting them into a new way. Our gospel writer, Luke, begins the story by naming the reality these people are living in. That's what that whole list of emperors and governors and tyrants is about at the beginning of the gospel. He's setting the context. These people are living under the thumbs of the oppressors, subject to their whims and greed and general disinterest in humanity. And so, much of the time, these people are squashed. By all outward appearances, it seems like these mighty rulers hold all the power. And yet, people come. People are leaving the cities and trekking out into the middle of nowhere, coming to hear what John the Baptist has to say. It's a challenging word, and it's also deeply good news for them. As they gather there, beyond the easy reach of the oppressors, he begins pointing the crowds towards something else, toward another way of life. He begins by casting a vision for what more is possible, telling them about the goodness that is on the way. There's a hitch, though. It won't just happen to them. It won't happen magically or automatically. God's saving grace is free, yes, and still they have to join in. They have to help get ready. They have to prepare the way. This is John's work through and through. He lays the groundwork. He helps people to learn what's coming, and he helps them to prepare. The beautiful thing about the monument to Dry Rot was that it was only the tip of the iceberg. When I started in as your rector here a few months later, I learned that there was an extensive effort underway to plan and prepare for what this church would need physically in a really intentional way. At our first couple of vestry meetings together, one of the main things we discussed was the reserve study that was nearly complete. It laid out all the maintenance and repairs that the church would likely need over the next 30 years, from fixing locks to putting on new roofs. Thankfully, I think we've got easily another 20 years in this carpet, so that we can ignore for now. It was simple and yet very detailed as a way to take stock and to honestly plan for what was to come. Of course, none of this was an end in and of itself. It wasn't for John, and it wasn't for the leaders here. John did not care about valleys being raised up and mountains being brought low just for a change in landscape. He didn't worry about the shape of a direct or crooked road in order to have a lovely map. More than anything, he just longed for people to be able to make their way to God and to have a smoother, more direct path for that journey. And by the same token, I don't think the folks working on repairing glue lambs and making plans for new shingles cared all that much about these material things, but rather what these things made possible. Who could come together and how in this sacred space? How easily could people access worship and a place to gather as a community? How safely could we do so for decades to come? For John and for our leaders here, it was a question of what it looks like to prepare. How do we help make something truly wonderful become possible? How do we prepare for other people to come near and find a home and encounter the Holy One? How do we do this for others? Yes, and how do we do this for ourselves? That, I think, is a question that lies at the heart of Advent. How do we prepare? I was in a meeting recently when a colleague described a simple matrix for reflecting on how we spend our time. There are four quadrants where you can sort your to-do list. On the two rows, we divide tasks into the categories of either important or unimportant. Simple enough. And then we divide those again into columns, into what is urgent and what is not so pressing. So that which is neither urgent nor important, we can probably just cross that off the list entirely. Things that are both urgent and important, those need our attention pretty quickly. But then there's this tricky category of important but not urgent. It needs our attention, but seems like tomorrow will probably be just as fine as today. The house is not on fire. The roof, thanks be to God, is intact. How easy it is, though, to just let those things go, to let them slide back off the front burner, away from our attention, let them fizzle out and be forgotten. even if we really care about them. I think that's where John is trying to grab people's attention and offer another way forward. The people he's teaching have more urgent things to worry about than the wild, hopeful news that the Messiah is coming and is going to change everything. Most of these people just need to figure out how to get by. They need to dodge the tyrants with their short tempers and tendency to exploit everyone. There isn't much time for them to try to get ahead, and it seems like there isn't space to daydream about liberation or wonder about how God could be drawing near to them in a new way. Maybe this isn't so different from our own day, and all the fears that press in and the demands that run flashing towards us, insisting that we offer up more time and attention and money. It can be easy for God and for what God hopes for us to recede further and further back, almost out of sight, eclipsed by all the urgent stuff clamoring around us. Friends, my confession to you today is that it is far too easy for me to let the urgent take priority over that which is important but doesn't have to happen today. How easy it is to let my focus on beauty or connection or love slide till tomorrow and the next day and the next, until all my days are filled with successfully meeting deadlines, but failing to really make space for God in my attention, in my actions, and maybe most especially in my heart. And then comes the reminder from our glue lamps and from John the Baptist. Something incredible is possible. This is what they tell us. Something incredible is possible. How can we prepare for that? Something beautiful is coming. How can we get ready together? God is coming close, coming here with more grace than we will even know what to do with. How, then, are we preparing to meet this love?